The National Broadcasting Company, in the interests of the American system of radio, presents the seventh in a series of eight dramas by George H. Faulkner entitled American Portraits. Tonight's star, Stefan Schnabel. The makers of the American Revolution were not, all of them, American by birth. To represent the huge and decisive contribution of sympathizers from abroad, we have chosen tonight to draw for you a picture of one of the earliest adventurers in arms who came to the aid of our young republic. His name? Well, perhaps you'd like to guess his name as we go along. The title of our play? Reveille. Time is September in the year 1777. Place, the European home of Dr. Benjamin Franklin at Passy, near Paris. A conversation between Dr. Franklin and a mysterious friend draws toward a close. The language is French, but if we may be permitted to translate.
Time, sir, is of the essence. Arrangements have been made for you to sail from Marseille. On Saturday, you will board the French frigate L'Heureux of 24 guns.
L'Heureux, the happy one. A fortunate name, Dr. Franklin.
Yes, and a good omen, I hope. By the way, you are aware that the aid being given the American colonies by the French court in this matter is highly secret. Entirely secret.
Of course. I do not talk. Since 14, I am a soldier.
Ah. The frigate will be disguised as a merchantman under the name of Le Flamand. You will take ship as one Mr. Frank, bearing dispatches for the governor of Martinique. But you will debark, with the help of God, at Portsmouth in New Hampshire.
Evening, lads.
Well, Sarge, what's new at headquarters?
What's new? Is there ever anything new at Valley Forge?
No. You was going to keep your ears open, Sarge. Didn't you hear anything?
Two things I heard. Two. Listen as I was to the big brass gorgets and their grand powwow.
What'd you hear, Sarge?
One, General Washington has wrote a letter to the gentlemen of Congress. A swilling of their port back in York in front of a fire. Gents, he says, we must have instant aid, or else we must either starve or disband. And the general, God bless him, has heard back. The gentlemen of Congress are sending us...
Food, shoes,
riches,
guns,
ammunition.
No, lads. They're sending a committee.
A
committee to investigate and report back and so on and so on, etc., etc.
We ought to skin them to make shoe leather.
Point two. The boy made a speech.
Lafayette?
The boy himself. Gentlemen, he says, what this army needs is to be an army. Right now, he says, we're not an army at all. We're a mere rabble. Oh, hold on now. He was right complimentary. No ordinary rabble, he says, could have held out like us. But we need somebody to tell us what to do, and how to do it, and why to do it.
Did he have any notions about what we're going to eat while we're doing it?
Well, no. The point wasn't mentioned. His lordship, the quartermaster general, Mr. Mifflin, he wasn't there. He's in York by the fire, chomping on a side of beef.
That does it. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going home, back to Poughkeepsie, where all the pigs have four legs and turn into pork overnight.
I'm with you.
Unbolt the door, Corporal.
That's up.
Corporal, close the door for the love of God. Thank you.
Man, this is Colonel Alexander Hamilton, General Washington's aide on tour of inspection. Colonel, this is what's left of my regiment. 4th New York, as you know.
What was your strength when we went into winter quarters here, Captain Walker?
90 men.
And now?
This morning, sir, there were 30 of us left.
Oh. What are those men doing in their bunks, Captain, this hour in the evening?
We're short of clothing, sir. Some of us have no breeches. We have to share about. The naked ones lie in the bunks.
Huh? Well, let's have a look at this boy. Hmm. Sleeps pretty soundly. Lift the blanket, Captain.
Yes, sir. Oh, yes. It's Wilson from Newburgh. Hmm. He was in a bad way this morning. The lungs, you know, and the frost. But he's not asleep, sir. He's dead.
And thus, General Washington, gentlemen of the staff, I conclude my report of conditions here and now. And may I say
that... Thank you, Colonel Hamilton. Gentlemen, you realize the seriousness of our situation. We have 10,000, more or less. Heaven knows how many more, how many less. Some 10,000 troops left.
The sick we can count easily, gentlemen. More than a fifth of our body.
The point I wish to make, General Conway, is that in the European sense, these troops do not constitute an army at all. Despair, lack of discipline, desertions, disorganization. These are the roots of our difficulties.
May I suggest, sir, that the root of our difficulty lies in this senseless, stupid, and utterly destructive attitude of the Congress. Good heavens, sir, even if we win, are we to be ruled by a coterie of timid, greedy dolts and asses?
If we win, Colonel, and we shall win, we will be ruled by the representatives of the people. That is what we are fighting for. The people's representatives will never be inspired judges, nor saints, nor philosophers. Oh, surely this is no time or place for political theorizing. Ours is a practical problem. It has been stated most clearly by Lafayette.
Thank you, sir. Being so young, I had feared to raise my voice.
All voices are needed now. You should know, my dear young friend, that the problem you pose to us is not a new one in our eyes. We have proposed to the Congress that an inspector general be appointed.
Congress again. Talk, talk, talk. How long must this go on, sir?
Possibly until you learn patience, Hamilton. And common charity. Yes, General Conway.
Since we are so clearly getting nowhere whatever, sir, may I suggest that we adjourn? I, for one, have need of sleep. General Wilkinson here, he is asleep.
It would be a shame to wake him. Well, I, too, am weary of debate. Gentlemen, we stand adjourned. Sleep well, General Conway.
Good night, General.
What a waste of time, these eternal councils. And how characteristic of our so democratic commander.
Our commander at the moment, Conway.
And
what a heavenly aroma. What is it?
Guinea hen. Huh? Well roasted. Well. Prime. And a quart of Rhenish grape to wash it down. And brandy to come.
Oh.
Nice, my friend.
But here at Valley Forge, how do you manage?
I have friends in the Congress at York, General Wilkinson.
Oh.
Good friends, well placed. Two of them on the Board of War. As they decamp to General Gates, you must know how these things are done, eh? Come, Wilkinson. We can understand each other.
Of course.
The friends of General Gates at York are my friends and yours. We can do business, Wilkinson.
Oh? How?
In this matter, Washington has placed himself in an utterly untenable position. Someone is needed to create an army out of this disorganized mob at Valley Forge. So he has recommended to the Board of War that an inspector general be appointed. Do you know who that inspector general will be, Wilkinson?
Who?
Me, General. Me.
You?
It's all arranged. And I am to report directly to the Board of War, not to General Washington. Do you understand?
Could I...
Ah, a little brandy, certainly. Now, to us, General Wilkinson, to us, and to our future Commander-in-Chief, General Horatio Gates.
This is the end, Hamilton. The end.
What has happened, sir?
I've just received word from Congress that the Board of War has finally acted on my recommendation. They've appointed an inspector general. They've appointed Conway.
Conway? That French-Irish charlatan? What are we going to do, sir?
We can do nothing. He's not under my command. He will, they instruct me, report directly to the Congress. Oh, it's insufferable. I shall receive him with the courtesy required by his new office and the contempt suggested by his odious person.
If you were to take my advice, sir, you'd march on York and seize power yourself. The men would follow you.
I had forbidden you to mention that vanity again, Hamilton. Perhaps my career is nearing its close. Well, it may end in defeat, but never shall it end in treason.
But, sir, we cannot...
We cannot discuss the matter, Colonel.
I was about to suggest, sir, that our fortunes can descend no lower.
Come in. Yes, Colonel Lawrence?
A message, sir, from one of Dr. Franklin's New England agents.
Let me see it, Lawrence.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Frank has departed from Boston with messages for the governor of Martinique. Good.
Good news, sir?
It may be the answer to our prayers. Dr. Franklin has won an illustrious recruit to our cause. Mr. Frank is the Baron Frederick William von Steuben, the foremost soldier in Europe.
In the days of Dr. Franklin and General Washington, news traveled very slowly. So slowly that months were required to bring word of Mr. Frank's coming from Paris to Valley Forge. Today, NBC and its affiliated stations bring you the news of the world in a matter of minutes, even seconds after that news breaks. But there is more to network radio than that. Radio is a more efficient and less expensive way to advertise. The increased sales resulting from the advertising means more production of goods and lower prices for you. In addition, the keen competition inherent in advertising shows up every day in new products, in better products for your use. Every program broadcast by NBC and its affiliated stations, whether it contains an advertising message or not, is paid for by the revenue gained from advertisers. So, when shopping, remember the brand names you've heard on NBC. Those manufacturers believe in their products enough to urge the greatest possible number of people to test them in their homes. Only quality products can survive this test. Only quality products can continue to advertise. We return to the headquarters of General Washington at Valley Forge, where his shivering army suffers in the snow. Desertions mount daily with the continued failure of supply. And over the commander himself hangs the threat of the infamous Conway Gates cabal. At last, Washington takes steps against the conspirators.
Colonel Lawrence.
Yes, sir.
Prepare a letter to General Conway. And listen to this, Colonel Hamilton.
Yes, General.
You ready, Lawrence?
Yes, sir.
General Conway, a letter which I received last night contained the following paragraph. In a dispatch from General Conway to General Gates, Conway wrote, "Heaven has determined to save your country, General Gates. Else a weak commander-in-chief would have ruined it long since." End of quotation, Colonel. Sign the letter, "I remain your humble servant, George Washington."
That is all, sir?
That is all.
General, how did you learn of Conway's letter to Gates?
Wilkinson, in his cups as usual, babbled it out in the hearing of one of my few friends at Gates' headquarters.
But Conway will tell Gates at once, and Gates will think...
Yes, if I know Gates, he will think that you, Colonel, must have examined his dispatches by stealth when you were at his headquarters last week. He trusts no one. And being by nature a fatuous bungler, he will write to me denying that he ever received such a letter from Conway. He will write to Congress also, complaining that I have libeled Conway. Such a hubbub will be raised that the whole plot must come out into the open at last. In the open, they will appear for what they are, subverters of our cause, and arrant fools to boot.
I see, sir. The letter is a slow fuse leading to a barrel of gunpowder at York.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Colonel, I trust arrangements have been made to receive the bandman Steuben.
Oh, yes, sir. He'll be met by a headquarters company under Captain Walker on the York Road and escorted here with every honor, sir.
It can't be much longer now. When he comes, I shall ride out to meet him myself.
General Washington, may I present the Baron Frederick William von Steuben.
Welcome, my dear Baron. We've all of us looked forward to your arrival.
General, mine English is not good. I have learned a speech to say to you, so I forget. I am very happy.
Many of our officers are able to converse in French, Baron. Captain Walker here is accomplished in German as well.
Ah, mon ami Walker. Wir haben schon gesprochen. Wir werden uns gut verstehen, no?
Nee, oui. Zu allen Zeiten. Können Sie sicher sein.
Captain Walker, my letters to the Baron, I have hinted at our pitiful condition here. At your earliest opportunity, you will explain to him those things which cannot be said in letters. Tell him our enemy has forced us in these campaigns to fight pitched battles on the European order and on a European scale.
Yes, sir.
We've lost those battles for lack of unified training, for lack of system, for lack of drill. To instill system will be the Baron's work.
I think perhaps the Baron understands English better than he speaks it, General Washington.
Aber ja. Ah, mon général, si, wenn, no, if you but knew how my heart rejoices, how happy I am to do again the work of a soldier. I have come here to work. I go to work at once.
Baron, you bring us new hope.
I tell you, Mistress Green, the like of this man, Von Steuben, has not before been seen on our side of the ocean. Why, he's a combination of Don Quixote, Jolly Father Christmas, and Satan himself, all rolled into one, with seven-league boots.
La! And so handsome, too. I do declare, on horseback, he looks like the very god of war.
But, Captain, my husband tells me the men are laughing at your Baron von Steuben, just as we are now.
And is it not good to hear laughter again at Valley Forge, Mrs. Green? They began by laughing at him. In a day's time, they were laughing with him. All day he labors at the drill ground, pushing and pounding each squad into shape, as if he were a young lieutenant eager for promotion. Each night he spends writing out a new chapter in his manual of war. And I, perforce, stay up to make a fair copy in English. And then six men work until dawn, making more copies for the brigade commanders. At 3 a.m., 3 a.m., mind you, the Baron is up again. He smokes a pipe while his valet dresses his hair. He has one cup of coffee. And at sunrise, he's drilling his beloved model company again. One, two, three, cut. Ein, zwei, drei, four. And I, of course, I'm out there with him, translating all three languages at once.
Poor Captain Walker. You must be worn out. Quite worn out.
On the contrary, Madam Green, I had never felt better in all my life. Since your husband succeeded the wretched Mifflin as quartermaster, I have acquired a warm coat to my back and reasonable rations to warm my innards. And I have work to do. Good work.
Captain, we must meet this paragon of yours.
I shall oblige with great pleasure. And when he meets you, Miss Mead, I know what he'll say.
And what will he say, Captain?
I can hear him now. Wunderschön. Wunderschön. Ach, Liebchen, comme vous êtes belle. How you are épouvantablement. Ravissante.
And then Fritz says to me, he says, "Sergeant Jenkins, you know what is this? A bayonet," says I. "What is for, Sergeant?" says he. "To roast pig meat on the end of," says I. "When we got pig meat, which we ain't." "Dumb cook," he says, "it is for sticking lobster backs into belly. I show you." And he grabs my musket and starts dancing around and stabbing the air like a great Dutch windmill.
And five, right here. 1, 2, 3, 4. Earth, got dumb rough, dumb rough. And five, right here. 1, 2, 3, 4. Earth, got dumb rough, dumb rough. And
gentlemen of Congress, there you behold an army. When you were last with us, you saw pitiful rabble. I arranged for this review in your honor, gentlemen, so that you might see with your own eyes what has happened.
It is miraculous, General Washington, simply miraculous.
No, sir, it is the result of the genius and hard work of Baron von Steuben, who came to us as a volunteer, without pay.
You know, of course, that Inspector General Conway has tendered us his resignation.
I do. If I may, I would like to nominate as his successor in the office and pay of Inspector General, the Baron Frederick William von Steuben.
Achtung! Feuer! Marsch!
Gentlemen of the staff, little did I think I would live to see the day when it would be possible to serve a banquet at Valley Forge. General Greene has outdone himself with the farmers in the hinterland. And, gentlemen, the occasion is worthy of his efforts. I have news for you. Splendid news. Yes, sir. His Majesty King Louis the 16th of France has declared that a state of war exists between his country and Britain. Lafayette.
General, friends, this, you must know, is the happiest moment of my life. May I propose a toast to the people of my country, to France.
To France. I have further news, hardly less important, hardly less gratifying to me. Baron von Steuben.
Yes, sir.
Baron, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for the work you've accomplished here. In a few short weeks, you've performed a feat, sir, without parallel in the history of arms. You've surmounted obstacles beyond number. You've turned a sick, despondent mob into a spirited army of disciplined soldiers. You've taught us how to laugh again. My news is this. The Continental Congress has confirmed your appointment, Baron, as Inspector General in the Army of the United States. Another toast to General von Steuben, the architect of our future victory.
Gentlemen,
My English is not good. But it is better, no? Yes, I have teach. I have learned. I have learned much. More than what I teach. From these men, these sans culottes, these ones without breeches. I have learned what it means, this word, freedom. I have seen, I know, no European soldiers could do what they have done. In Europe is slaves. Here is free men. Another toast. I give you the American private soldier. He is the best fighting man in the world. To our victory.
Shall we join the ladies? Congratulations. Herr Baron?
Ah, mon ami Walker. Have you heard?
Yes, it's wonderful. Wonderful, sir.
Oh, Baron, there's a pretty young lady here who wishes to meet you.
But certainly, Captain. Jolie, tu dis?
Oh, oui, très jolie, très jolie, très belle. Et elle parle français.
Oh, oh. Où est-elle?
Ici.
Miss Mead.
Yes?
May I present Inspector General von Steuben?
Mademoiselle, comme vous êtes belle. Comme vous êtes épouvantablement ravissante.
The Baron spoke for himself in no uncertain terms. He didn't bother to write it out on a piece of paper. And if you wanted to sell your house or a car, you wouldn't send a piece of paper with your sales talk printed on it. You'd talk with the buyer yourself. Because people sell better than paper. The voice is more persuasive than ink. And that's true in advertising, too. Now, that doesn't mean everyone should use door-to-door salesmen. That's pretty expensive. A door-to-door salesman can only make about 20 calls a day. But there is a way advertisers can use the human voice and personality to make several million nationwide calls at one time. It's network radio. Radio is people. It's a grocery clerk or an automobile salesman multiplied millions of times. With network radio, people talk to more people at less cost than with any other method of advertising and with better results. For people sell better than paper. Von Steuben tonight was the distinguished stage and screen actor Stefan Schnabel. Kermit Murdoch played General Washington. This is Ben Grauer inviting you to listen next week when we present Carl Swenson in Keepsakes, a dramatic portrait of Abraham Lincoln. The American Portrait series is written by George H. Faulkner and directed by James Harvey. Our music is conducted by Milton Katims from an original score composed by Alan Shulman. Tonight's American Portrait was presented through the courtesy and cooperation of the editors of Cavalcade of America, which is heard regularly on Tuesday nights and which will resume its fall broadcasting season on September 4th. Now hear Brian Donlevy and his dangerous assignment on NBC.